From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 21st, 2022. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. And I gotta tell you, Chris, things are going downhill pretty quickly here at Stately Long Manor.
Why? What's going on?
Last month I got my AARP card, right?
Yes. I've been
12 down. I'm still waiting for my damn trunk organizer that I don't have a trunk for, but I got a tracking number for it, though, so I can track it.
Excellent.
And then yesterday I picked up my first pair of bifocals.
Oh, no.
Yes. I'm Ben freaking Franklin
in the house. That's what I was going to say.
So the weird thing is that I've had these multifocal contact lenses for a couple years now. Never really warmed up to them, but, you know, it's the only way I can see stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And one of my eyes is so bad now that they can't even give me multifocal. So I've got one multifocal and one not. So reading the show notes, everything is, like, skewed. It's really weird. But I didn't get the bifocal glasses last time because I'm like, I'm not old enough for that. Well, then I'm like lifting my glasses up every time to like read the phone.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, give me the stupid bifocals. And, they're like, do you want the lines on them? I'm like, do I want to look like I'm 90? And so I wore them for the first time today. I went to pick them up yesterday, but I had my contacts in. So the lady's like, can you see? And I'm like, I can't see anything because I've got contacts and glasses on. I'll let you know tomorrow. So this morning was my first morning walk with the bifocals, and I cannot figure them out. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get used to them, but
oh no!
Not only do I have bifocals, I don't even know how to use bifocals. That's how sad my life is now.
Did they ask you if you wanted the little elastic connector to the earpieces to go around your head so you won't lose them?
To the bungee that I have my Players Club card for the casino, so it all
that makes me nervous because my cousin has the trifocal permanent lenses that got the operation, and they work perfectly, she said. They work absolutely perfectly. And apparently, it was in Europe for 10 years, but they didn't approve it here until, like, only recently, like, I mean, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago or something. And she loves them, and they work perfect. It has the distance, the medium, and the read-up close-up stuff. And I was like, well, what about if you're laying down in bed and you have to look? And she's like, no. And she laid down on the couch for me to show me. She's like, nope, they still work exactly the way. And I'm like, that's fantastic. But if you're still getting used to using, I don't know, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous about, because my eyes are, at 48, I started to need cheaters. And it's so weird because I was in front of a computer screen, you know, my whole life, basically, since I was like 6 or 7 or 8. And to finally need glasses was such a shock, you know, cheaters, or whatever. Like, I'm wearing them right now so I can look at the screen and stuff and see what. But if you're having trouble with them and you've worn contact lenses and glasses like your whole life, I'm nervous. You're making me nervous here. This is unexpected. I didn't know I was going to have anxiety on the show today.
I just had to get used to my day. That's what the eye doctor told me about the multifocal contacts, and that's a big lie. I never got used to them, but I think I just got to get used to them. So we've been talking.
You're not making me feel better, dude.
Yeah, I'm hoping to. I didn't want to go the cheater route because I like to travel light.
I
like to have my wallet, my keys, my phone. Those are the only three things I want ever.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to like remember to take my cheaters, even though they got them in super small things now. But
they're a pain in the ass.
This is my desperate last attempt to avoid Cheaterville.
And I always wear them like in my shirt collar, my cheaters. So like, you know, I'm like Matthew McConaughey or something, you know, except they're cheaters. They're not sunglasses. And so every time people want to hug me, you know, cause I'm huggable, you know, they're like, I don't want to break your glasses. And I'm like, it's all right. Don't worry about the cheaters. You know, they're cheap. They're a dollar or whatever. But, yeah, I want to get rid of them. I want the lenses, you know, but there's nothing wrong. My eyes aren't that bad that I need lenses, but I do need the cheaters and it's annoying as hell.
Yeah, that's a tough spot. I'm blind as bat, so I don't have that problem.
We just lost half our audience, I think, when they found out how freaking old we are.
We still got the 65 and older crowd there. They're like, this is fascinating.
Yeah, they're doing the Arsenio Hall fist pump right now, you know?
Mildred, let me put the show on for you.
Who was that lady that listened to our show just to go to sleep? Remember her? She's like from West Palm.
Yes.
She's like, oh, I love you guys. You put me to sleep every night. I'm like, oh, dagger to the heart, you know? All right, let's get on with some poker.
All right, the nominees have been announced for this year's Global Poker Awards, which will be announced in February. And while the media, including Annie Up, were back on the voting panel
this year.
At least I was, sorry. we'll choose the winners in most categories. Fans got their say in a few, including Personality of the Year. You can visit Global Poker Index's website to see all the nominees. And while fan voting has ended, it started and ended before we could even tell you about it.
Oh, jeez.
Poker News did ask its readers to vote in its own internal poll, and among the choices for Personality of the Year were Alan Kessler, Daniel Negreanu, Phil Hellmuth, Jamie Kerstetter, Nick Schulman, Mike Matisau, and Doug Polk.
Wow. Who do you think's going to win?
Favorite here?
I think it's going to be Negreanu again. He wins everything.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting because it's Personality of the Year, and obviously, I mean, and this, again, this is Poker News' shortlist, right? So it could be anybody because you could have entered any name you want. So, but it's a pretty solid shortlist, I think, from this year. So obviously Negreanu, as you mentioned, is always a personality, and he hasn't slowed down this year. Alan Kessler, I think, has been a little bit more active this year, which is hard to – I mean, kind of funny to say because he's used – very active.
Right.
I think he really inserted himself. And then if you go back to like the Alan Kessler, Mike Matisau, who was going to have the first Twitter meltdown. So, I mean, right there, you've already had people talking about.
Exactly.
Betting on whether you're going to have a Twitter meltdown. So that kind of makes you a personality of the year. And then you got Doug Polk. And I don't know if this is the past year, but obviously, I mean, you know, he was leading that campaign to get the Las Vegas mayor ousted. You remember that?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, I think that probably happened last year, 2 years ago. Everything runs together, but he's been knee deep in these investigations of wrongdoing and live streaming and stuff as well too. So you can make a case that he's a fresh face there. But
and the Texas Poker Room too, right? Wasn't he part of the Texas Poker Room? So he's everywhere.
But I'm really going to have a hard time accepting anybody but Phil Hellmuth this year. And I know we're feeding the beast here, and I've been quite critical that I just don't like the shtick anymore. I never did, really, but I definitely don't now. And really crossed some lines with the burning down the Rio and the stuff this year. But you can't deny that he has been the biggest personality, I think, this year. Anybody else gotten more talked about this year than Phil Hellmuth?
I guess I agree with that. I guess the other thing is, like, what's your definition of personality? You know, is it just annoying? Or is it, you know, it depends. You know, I mean, Daniel Negreanu.
Personality, right? I mean, some people have personalities, and some people are just annoying because of that, their personalities.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So my Instagram account got not hacked, but duplicated, spoofed, I guess they call it, right? Which is funny. I never use Instagram other than just look at Lita Ford pictures. But but three or four friends of mine that let me know, hey, I think you've been hacked. They were having conversations with Fake Scott.
Wow.
And they're like, that's when we knew it wasn't you, because the first one, because Fake Scott didn't have any personality. And I'm like, yes, that personality.
Oh,
it was like, yeah, I got a little suspect when he started talking about God. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you went to the God thing right away? Like, you didn't even ask for the money first? It sucks. But yeah, so see, I mean, you either have personality or don't. And apparently I do, and my Fake Scott Instagram profile does not.
Wow.
So I know what you're saying, but I think just being in a conversation of somebody that is a personality makes you a personality, I think.
All right. So then Helmy's going to win.
I'm just saying, you know, again, I don't like to feed the beast, and he may not win because people don't want to feed the beast anymore, but I just think they're really, of all these people, and a lot of these people got a lot of attention this year. I just don't think anybody on this list got as much attention as Phil Hellmuth.
It's funny because I remember back in the day when we were recording a show at the radio station, we had that ethical, legal conversation where I was confusing what's allowed at the poker table and what's ethical at the poker table. It's very similar to this, that people might confuse personality with popularity.
True.
Right? Yep. Because, I mean, the most popular poker player in the world would still be close race between Negreanu and Hellmuth. But I think that when it comes down to personality, it's just, there are subtle things that are different there. It's the way he acts, not that a million people like the way he acts, or it's the comments he makes, not how many people react to the comments he makes. So there's a subtle difference there.
Yeah, but and let's go back to the fact that, we've said this time and time again on this show, that we believe, or at least I believe, I think you do too, that he's cultivated this personality.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely.
It's a show, because when he's not on, you know, in the limelight, I mean, by all accounts, he's a nice, normal guy, right? So, I mean, he's created this persona to further his, you know, popularity or personality, whatever you want to say. So the fact that you're creating a persona is literally the same word as personality, right? So,
yeah.
So, you know, I mean, again, you cannot like the guy for it, and I don't like the guy for it, but you can't deny that, you know, he knows how to create a persona, and therefore I think shows that he has personality, whether it's real or not. So,
hence, personality.
Yes, right? Yes,
all right. All right, we'll see. Oh, one thing I want to say about this, though, before we move on. I'm very happy that our very good friend and Wisconsin ambassador, Chad yes. Holloway, is up for the sports poker reporter of the year or whatever. And it's phenomenal. You know, it's four guys, all very popular, all very good at what they do. But our buddy is one of them, you know, bracelet winner, cruiser, and Antioch, Wisconsin ambassador is up for this huge award. So he's going to get to go to Vegas and enjoy himself, and maybe he'll take down a victory. That'd be fantastic for him.
Yeah, and they're very tight-lipped on how the voting worked, but what I will say is that what I like about it is that the initial thing, you were only allowed to nominate, like, one person you work with, and then in the final voting, you weren't allowed to vote for anybody you work with, something like that.
Right.
They had rules in place. Now, I don't know how they quantified that or make sure you didn't do it, but I played by the rules, so I gave Chad a little shout-out in the first one, and obviously I couldn't in the second one.
Exactly. Very good. Always taking the legal and ethical road here at Antioch.
Yes, there we go. All right, speaking of poker news, it has posted an article with the five American players to watch in 2022. And here they are, Chris. Okay. Kind of England from Chicago, who entered 2021 with just $21,000 in career tournament winnings, but ended it with just shy of $900,000, including MSPT title. Aliim Sarovic, man, I've nailed that every week now.
Man, 2 weeks in a row.
Who won 14 high roller events in 2021, 8 more than anyone else.
Man.
Sean Perry, who won 6 high roller titles in 2021 and added $4 million to his career tournament winnings total. Brock Wilson, who was one of the hottest live players in 2019 just before the pandemic started. And Chad Evislage, who earned $2.3 million in tournament winnings in 2021, including a WPT title.
Well, I've heard of most of these people, so that's interesting.
That's always
I find it funny that the American player to watch is named England.
Yes.
But one thing I want to say is, are you impressed? Now, of course, it's impressive that the guys win these high roller events and stuff. But is it just like the old days when the World Series titles were like 20 people and they're the only 20 who would take that money and do it? So you've got a 1 in 20 shot of winning a high roller event and... You know, it's
a modern version of that. Yeah,
I do too, right? I do too.
And so, and I will also say I think there's a place in our poker world for that. That we allow those people to play high rollers, and we fet them for being high rollers, even though, you know, most poker players are never going to be in a high roller event. So
right,
up there, and you know, go back to what was it, Josh Aurier, actually, if you remember, you know, when he had his heater this summer. Or fall, I mean, when he became the player of the year, and he bowed out of the high roller at the end, and he made a very complimentary comment to the folks that, you know, the folks that roll in the high roller atmosphere are a special breed, and he kind of made it sound like that wasn't him, and so...
They absolutely are, but the numbers are bloated because there's fewer people in those events. Sure. You know, Ali's not going to win 14 World Series bracelets. Right, he might win one or two, but he's not going to win 14.
It's hard to quantify it. I mean, we've talked about this before too. So for me, that stat that he won 14 of these. I mean, yeah, okay. So I mean, one. Well, just admit that's impressive, right?
But right. It's hard to win 14 of anything.
To your point, it's not as impressive as it should be. What is impressive though is it's 8 more than anybody else.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So you know, if you. If we're doing the 50-yard dash, Chris, you know, no one's really impressed that two 50-year-olds could actually run 50 yards, right? But if I win 19 times and you only win once, then...
Yeah, clearly you're the better runner.
Yes. I'm a little more impressive than you are.
And it's so funny, they say eight more than anyone else, and of course the next person is Sean Perry, who won six. So he's the he's the anyone else.
fantastic. So I mean, obviously this Ali I'm So Rich is just, you know, lights out. Now, it'd be great to see the predictions that, if you remember on last week's show, Poker News was predicting that he's going to win not only the World Series Player of the Year, repeat as Poker Go Tournament Player of the Year, and then I forget what the other one was, but and we said that's going to be a tall order for any player, right?
Right. So,
but the fact that he's at this high level, it'd be interesting to see if it can translate to normal people poker.
I was actually surprised that that Chance Kornuth guy wasn't on that list. That guy is phenomenal, and he's even winning right now as we're speaking.
Yeah, just won one just recently, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised he's not one to watch in 2022 over some of these names. But you know, I guess you got to give a lot of people ink. You can't just keep giving it to the five who are always winning or whatever. But I mean, Ali's on that list. Brock's on that list, and this guy's chance is phenomenal. So we'll see. We'll see if he ends up having a great year.
Yeah, so the one I'm most interested in, because again, we can go back to this personality argument, right? But what makes an American player one of the five to watch, right? I mean, obviously, some of these are most of them are just because they're on serious heaters right now. But the kind of England, I mean, this is like for listeners of our show, I mean, this is the inspiration, right? I mean, there are probably a number of our listeners that have $21,000 in tournament. Career tournament winnings. I mean, I need to go back and check mine. I might be close to that, Chris.
Wow.
That's over a million tournaments, right? So it's impressive. But the fact that you're in that stratosphere, and then by the end of the year, you could win almost $1 million, including a top title, that gives you hope. That's why we keep playing, right? That's why we keep card room, and why we keep listening to this tired podcast as long as it's on. Right, because you're just hoping that you're going to have that one year like kind of England had. So then the question becomes: is that a blip, or is that actually a new baseline? Right. So right. I remember that you know, after the year after Greg Raymer won the World Series, then he followed up by finishing like what, in the top 30 or something next year. And I remember that clip where I think it was Phil Hellmuth was like, "Hey, everybody in the poker world is watching you." Yeah, everybody thought he was a fluke, and then he came back. And showed that he wasn't. So that'll be interesting to see if we're still talking about kind of England next year.
So you got me curious. I go on my Hendon Mob account, and I have two caches, and my total earnings, $999.
What?
Yep.
Oh, you have on there?
Yeah, because I don't play tournaments ever. Yeah. And then, like, a couple of them aren't on here. Like, I won a Raz title. That didn't put on here, and that was a pretty big tournament. And so it's like, why isn't that on here? So some of the things that I won or cashed in didn't make it. But I never played in tournaments that were, like, Hendon Mob on their you know, their, what do you call it, their radar. So I thought that was kind of funny. Although, if you go back, you type in the word Cosenza, I'm the only Cosenza on here that has his photo. It's the picture of me in the World Series. All serious, if Faso took it in Vegas of me, and that's there. So there's like four times. So there's 18 Cosenzas on here. I'm the only Chris, and I'm the only one with a photo. So
there you go. I got it for you.
A big ego.
My ATM is 17,224.
There you go. So you got it. You got to cash in an event, dude. You got to get the 20 grand.
170,247 on the GPI list. So,
oh man, I got that beat. I'm 382,194th on the list. So I'm right there with Ali. I think, you know, a couple of good showings and him and I, we're going to be together, I think. Crazy. Crazy shit right there.
Oh, man. All right. We'll see what happens next year.
Okay.
All right. A man this week walked into Legends Poker Room in Houston with an AR-15 and announced he was robbing the place, but was tackled by one of the poker room security guards and subdued by him and some other players until police could arrive. In the struggle, about a dozen shots were fired, but no one was hit by any of them.
Holy cow. Crazy.
So, you know, I didn't think we were ever going to mention Texas on this podcast.
Every week.
Except for every week now, right? So, I mean, literally, we're half joking when we say it's a wild, wild west out there. But it's not now.
I know.
It's not. This guy walked in, not with a gun, but an AR-15. Last time I saw that, Mr. T was using on the A-team. And so, fortunately, I'm not trying to make fun of this because this is super serious, right? Something really bad could have happened here. But a dozen shots got fired? I'm like, so, all right.
How does that happen?
I don't know whether we made the right decision here, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
We shouldn't have tackled him. We should have let him rob the place.
No, I'm saying in the heat of the moment, I'm glad that that security guard was there and made the thing. And I'm also glad that no one got hurt. But a dozen shots being fired, that's pretty scary to me.
It is scary.
It's pretty scary to me. And if I was sitting there and I bought in for $100, I think I would rather give this guy $100 than take one in the chest.
Yeah. Yeah. To take a risk of, okay, we're going to shoot 12 bullets. Are you going to get shot with one of them or are you going to give me $100? Yeah. I'll take the $100, please. Here you
exactly.
go.
So, I mean, but so I mean, I guess, I mean, it sounds like I'm joking. I'm not. This is super serious to me. I'm really concerned about this, that you know, these people think that they can just walk in and rob these places, again, because they probably don't think they're real casinos, right? And they don't have the same I can't remember the last time somebody walked into a casino with an AR-15.
Right, exactly.
This doesn't happen, right? Because
right.
They know there's no chance of coming out of that situation, right? Where is a strip mall poker room? All
right. Right.
So, again, now here are the list of things that Texas has to deal with now. Worry about the government cracking down on you. Worry about the government allowing casinos to put you out of business. Worried about an owner stealing all the money.
Absconding with your money, right.
Worried about, you know, the owner playing in games and collusion. And now, guys with AR-15 and security guards that want to be a hero. It's tough. It's tough out there, folks. It really is. So it's a great industry out there. They're doing some great stuff. But I don't know how you solve some of these problems.
And this is the same place where Sammy Farha threw some fists, right? Threw some hands.
I believe that might have been.
Yeah, I looked it up. I was in the middle of the search. It wasn't searching, so I just said it out loud. But then it finally loaded and said, yeah, Sammy Farha reportedly involved in physical fight at Legends. So that's where it was. So now you got to worry about Sammy Farha starting a fight at your place, too.
Apparently right down the road from Johnny Plant, China Chan's place, that went out of business.
Yeah, they went out of business. Wow. And one of my friends is moving to Abilene soon, and I feel so bad for her. I'm like, Abilene is like in the middle of nothing, but that's now you right. get it. You know what I mean? Good luck with that.
That'd be better. So, I don't know. I'd like to say we won't be talking about Texas next week, but can't guarantee you that.
Can't guarantee that at all. Hey, any updates? Papes, the Antiup fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans Group Facebook page to get feedback on hands, ask call-the-floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. You can buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email podcast at antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans Facebook group. We have a new O'Malley's Move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $2, $5 no-limit hold'em casino cash game. The action is pretty wild in this one, with several players who are not afraid to triple barrel bluff. The game is deep stacked, since you can match the biggest stack at the table when you buy in. As a result, the average stack is well over 1,000, with a few stacks over 5,000. This game has been going for hours. We bought in for 2,000 and currently sit with 3,000. The blinds post, the under the gun folds, the plus one calls, the MP folds, and the hijack raises to $25. He's a pretty decent player who plays a reasonable range pre-flop, but gets himself into trouble after the flop and tries to buy his way out of bad situations. He started the hand with around 2,400. The cutoff folds, and we're on the button with the ace of hearts, queen of clubs. If this had been a raise from earlier position, I'd probably fold here. Since it's from the hijack, I like a raise. I want to define this player's range, and if we get re-raised, we can easily fold and move on. We make it $75 to go. It's folded back around to the hijack, who calls relatively quickly. With around 150 in the pot, the flop is the ace of spades, 10 of spades, 7 of diamonds. The hijack checks, and we decide to make a bet. We put $100 into the pot. The hijack announces a raise and counts out a neat 300. Folding here would be exceptionally weak. We call. With 750 in the pot, the turn is the 6 of hearts. The hijack leads out, this time for 500. We call. There's now 1750 in the pot, and the river is the 4 of clubs. The hijack instantly shoves for his remaining 1500. So, if we call and win, it will be the biggest pot of our playing career. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Todd McGee is back this week, Chris.
All right.
And he started out by saying, I can't risk having the best poker cast come to an end due to a lack of hands of the week, so here's one. Keep it going.
Way to go, buddy. Keep us going.
There you go about that. So. all right, so he's playing 1-2 No Limit Maryland Live in November, and he says we were seven-handed, and I'm the out-of-towner while the others all seem to be regulars. I hadn't been playing long, but the table seemed to be full of calling stations who like to see flops. Most hands had 2 to 4 players to the flop. A player 2 to my right had the biggest stack at the table, and I'd just seen him check call a hand all the way to the river with an ace rag to lose a decent-sized pot.
Wow.
I was on the button, and he said the big stack guy to the standard pre-flop raise to $10, and it folds to us. And we have King-8 offsuit.
Well, it's very interesting because you have position, and I always think of Jamie Gold on the High Stakes Poker Show, getting ready to leave, trying to get out, but then it was his button. And he's like, I got to play my button before I go. I mean, you just have to play your button. And so the reason he's doing that is not because he's hoping for ace-ace. He's hoping to outplay somebody because he's got position and he's not playing the cards, he's playing the player. So we mentioned this a lot on the show, and I'm thinking, hey, you know, you're on the button. King-8 is horrible. It's a horrible, horrible hand, and it's offsuit on top of it, which, you know, if it was suited, Scott would have liked it back in the day. But today, he knows that's a terrible hand now. So I'm thinking, why are we calling with that unless we are of the caliber of player that it doesn't matter what we have in our hand? If it matters that we have King-8 in our hand, then we fold it. If it doesn't matter and we know this player that we're up against that we're probably going to be isolated with, then we might call or even re-raise because we think he might fold or that he might check to us after the flop and we can take it down. There's a lot that goes into this, so from a standard ABC, you just learn how to play poker, or you want to hear what we have to say about playing King-8, fold it every day and twice on Sunday.
Yep.
If you're like, hey, this big stack guy is a calling station because he check called the whole way down to the river with ace rag, then you, if you hit something, you might get some money out of this guy because he seems to be someone who can't fold and you probably win with any hand. But generally, you're getting rid of this. So in this situation, if I really know this guy, I might just pop it again, make sure the blinds go out, and take it down now, or get this guy in a situation where I'm in position the whole way, and I can control the betting that how much I want him to call, because he's going to call me the whole way. So it really just depends. I'm almost always folding this hand, even on the button. But if I feel confident in my ability to outplay people, then I'm going to either pop it or call.
I have literally nothing I can add to that, Chris.
All right.
Absolutely perfect. Just to reiterate, ABC, you should be folding this. But you gave some really good points about how, even not knowing this player more than just what we know about him, there is an opportunity here to profit off of him. So,
cool.
So yeah, again, I normally I would fold here. Let's think of the argument. Let's call here. I'm not so sure about raising. I like where you're going with that because you don't want to have multiple people in this hand. I mean, we have the one guy that we know. But the other, you know, the two blinds, we don't know how much how they play. So yeah, you're probably taking a risk calling and driving them out. But I don't know.
Yeah, you could go either way.
Yeah. All right, here says I had bought in for a 140 and was up to about 200. He says, I wanted to get into a hand with this guy, and I like to play my buttons, so I decided to call. Big blind also called, so 3 to a flop with about $25 in the pot.
So right there, he gives you a little insight, too. Todd likes to play the buttons, so that means he thinks he's good at it and that he's effective at it, because you don't like to do it if you suck at it. So he obviously thinks that he's well-suited to play the buttons. So the King 8 probably doesn't even have to play, so I don't mind calling. It's just if, you know, the big blind now is in the hand. So he hits some rag, and then you know what I mean? But obviously he's not going to stick around too long because we didn't categorize him as the villain. So he's probably not going to affect in this hand. But, yeah, I could see like a min raise or something, or just a little bit of a raise to ensure that you're going to be with this one player you want to isolate. But I think we got a good enough, at least a small blind folded.
Yeah. So 3-hand, it's not bad. Right. We're in position, and yeah. So I mean, I think we're in a good spot in this hand right now. So.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, the flop comes the King 6 Tray Rainbow, and big blind checks. Our big stack guy bets 15, and now it's on us.
Huh. Well, this is where you worry, because it's so funny to say this, but King 8 is a trap hand here. you had somebody raise in an earlier position, and now they're betting the King. I mean, generally, you raise with Ace King or King Queen when you're early. Even King Queen's a trap hand, obviously, but King 8 is like a major trap hand. So now, what if the guy has you crushed with Ace King or King Queen or King Jack or something, and now you have to hit two pair and get a better kicker, or you have to hit your own two pair? And so I don't like that. But I'm going to call this guy, which is funny, because we're going to probably end up being the calling station here because this guy bet out. I don't think we need to raise. I think the big blind's going to go away after this, and we're going to be isolated and half position with a pair of kings. But got to hate that kicker you have, and got to hate that he bet out. If he was a calling station, it just seems odd that all of a sudden he's aggressive raising and betting. You know, most calling stations kind of wait for someone to raise, or they just call the blinds, and then they check, call, check, call. This guy is raised and bet out, so he's kind of belying what he was, you know, targeted as. So I'm just going to call.
All right, I'm going to disagree here. I think I'm going to raise here. So I know we got in, and here's the problem, is we got in with a bad hand, and we mentioned why it was okay to get in with a bad hand, right? But now we hit our king, and you're right. I mean, kicker problems are what we're worried about here. But it doesn't seem like any other part of this flop would have hit anybody that we need to worry about. So at this point, I guess I just want to narrow down whether we really are up against another king. Because we could just as easily be up against queens, jacks, tens, anything like that, right? So, and you got a c-bet here. So his c-bet doesn't tell me anything, I don't think. Really would like to get this big blind to wait to the next hand, right?
Right.
And then I want to find out. So if we raise it here and get popped again, I think I could probably feel pretty confident I'm getting out of this. But he's the calling station, so I don't think he's going to. So, you know, I mean, it's almost like we're raising here to get a free card. So we could check behind on the turn if we want to, and give us two chances to hit that 8. So, I mean, he bet 15, a little bit more than half the pot. It's the right bet. I don't know. I think I might put 30 on top of this.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. It's just, you know, he talked about how we have kicker problems, and I'd hate to blow the pot, because let's say we win, raise it, or make it 30 more or whatever, and the guy calls. Then on the turn, it's a rag, and then he decides to bet out, you know, like 20. We're not going to fold for 20. And then on the turn river, we miss, but it still looks innocuous, and we're like, all right, we have a pair of kings, and now this guy bets 40, and you're like, all right, you know. So now you're looking at like 60, and if you raise it, now you're making the pot bigger, so his bets are going to be bigger. And I just would like to control the size of this pot, and I think also by calling, it might look like we're floating, and he might have queens and might not believe us. So when we now bet the turn, when he checks to us, you know, it might look like we're trying to steal the pot, and he might get him to check call and check call again, and we win with kings over his queens or something. So I don't know. I like the idea of keeping the pot a little bit smallish because we have kicker problems, but I like raising now before the pot is so big where we can afford a raise where it might be effective. It might get him to check to us on the turn, and then maybe control the pot and check behind, and then only have one bet to worry about in the river. I don't know. There's a lot of paths you can go.
So how about this one? How about a min raise? I generally don't like min raises because I think it's weak. But if our goal here, our goal here is a couple things, right? One, we want to get this big blind out of this. So now the big blind is facing $30 rather than $15.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to make it 45, but now it's, you know, it's 30 to them. So that's fairly significant for them to want to get out of this pot, I think, unless they have something, right? So that would accomplish that. And really, we're just trying, it's a probing bet. We're just trying to find out whether we're really up against an ace, king, king, queen, one of those kind of hands, right? So, and if we get raised, then we can get out, right? So now we've got out for the minimum. So, and if not, if we just get called, there's probably still a decent chance that he's going to check that turn. And that was my goal. My goal was to get two bites of the apple for my eight, my two pair. So, and then there's always that why so small argument, right? So maybe it throws him down to someone like, I'm sitting on a set of sixes, a set of trays here, and I want you to call. So I don't know. I think this might be one of those rare situations where min raise actually works.
Okay. I'll, you know what? I'll be on board with this. If he does raise, then, you know, we can get out. But at the same time, I mean, we are throwing an extra 15 in there that we didn't have to if he bets the turn, because we could fold then maybe. But I agree with you. I think we'll get the big blind out. That'll be effective. He may have gone out for the 15, but we probably know he's going to go out for the 30. And then if the guy doesn't pop us, then he's got some speculation that, you know, he's wondering if we're, you know, strong. Because if he was stronger than just a king, then he would pop it more. And so if he doesn't, you have to decide, is he being tricky or is he weak? So you might get some information from yours. You won't get any from mine. So I agree with you. Let's min raise.
All right. Our hero said, I sensed this guy was throwing a stack around, so I decided to re-raise and bump it to 30. Big blind folds, but the big stack calls to my surprise and chagrin. By the way, chagrin is one of my favorite words, too. Pot is now 85. So so I guess he did what we said, right? Bumped it to 30. That's a min raise.
Yeah.
Effectively, we got the big blind out, which is what I mentioned, and we didn't get re-raised, so fairly confident now that if he doesn't have a strong king, maybe. But now we'll see what happens if he checks this turn. Now we've got a couple options, I think. So
it's funny, because if he had a strong king, I don't know if necessarily if he would pop us again, because he might be, you know, cautious here, thinking that we limped in with pocket sixes or pocket trays, and we're just trying to get value for our set, you know. So he might be a little concerned that we've hit something that was unexpected, and so he doesn't want to just say automatically shove with ace king. You know, he might be a little hesitant. He might have jacks or something, and now he's like, all right, do you really have a king? Why are you min raising? You trying to get a free card out of this, you know, because you have 4-5 or something? Who knows? But I don't know. How would you play it if you had ace king there and you were him? Would you raise again?
No, I think you make a good point that now you've switched around. I mean, we were trying to play our position to like represent that hand, and so now, I mean, there's kind of like a reverse walk in the dog here, right? Now, of course, we don't know what the button has, and we send their ace king, but it's a reasonable assumption that they're using the position just to push us off, knowing that we had the C bet, right? So. So by simply calling, we don't tip our hand, or we induce another bet on the turn, right? Now it's just a matter of, you know, how stone cold ice in your veins you are, that, cause it's still just a one pair hand, right? So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's rainbow though. So you don't have to worry about, there's not a lot of, you have to worry about being caught up. There's no straights that I don't think I need to worry about. I mean, I don't, possible somebody sitting with 4-5 here, but I mean, there's not a lot of danger to come here if you have ace king, I don't think. So yeah. I mean, maybe the right play is to just call and sort of add some confusion as to what's going on, right?
I like the reverse walking the dog. It's like wag the dog, you know. That's pretty funny. I had a mental picture of like walking the dog backwards or something, you know. Yes. At the park
walking. Yep.
That's hilarious. All right. All right, so we agree we're probably going to min raise, and the other guy's probably just going to call is what we think is going to happen.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, pot's $85. The turn is a 10 that completes the rainbow, so it's king, six, tray, 10, and now our opponent checks to us.
Okay, well, we like the check. We think he's because if he had a big hand, he might have popped us. And when he didn't, why does he not bet out when it's a complete rainbow and safe? Why is he now worried? So he's worried we have something that beats him. So he wants to let us control the hand. So I'm comfortable betting a little bit here. I'd like to check behind just to control the pot size. But then if he makes a big bet on the end and I didn't make two pair, am I going to make that call? Whereas now I could probably make a smallish bet and maybe get him to fold. And if he doesn't fold, then he might check just again on the river, and then we check. So I don't mind a smallish bet, 35 maybe.
Yeah, I think I mentioned the check to get a free card thing, but I think circumstances have changed now. I think if we take the free card here, obviously you take it because you're hoping to hit that 8. But I think we're giving up too much control there and putting too much faith in hitting that 3-outer. At this point, we've taken control of the hand. You know, we raised him. He now checks to us. I think we got to keep betting here and give ourselves two ways of winning this pot, either by just having to give up or hitting that 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what the bet is here. I mean, I might go as much as 40, somewhere between 30 and 40, I think is probably the bet here.
Yeah.
I don't want to give him the chance to, like, bluff at us on the river. I mean, not saying that if we bet here that he can't still bluff us the river, but if we check here, I think any reasonable player, I think, is going to make that bet on the river, and then we're going to have to decide whether it's worth it or not.
Right? I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Here it says, I don't think he has a king, and the only thing that he could be chasing would be a random 4 or 5, so I decide to bet 40. To my surprise and chagrin again, he calls. Because now I'm worried I've walked into a king with a better kicker and decided to check the river and cut my losses. Pot is 165, and lo and behold, the river is an 8. So our final board is king, 6, tray, 10, 8, and our opponent checks to us.
Well, we like to check because, let's face it, if the guy had us crushed, we just re-crushed him. He doesn't have a set of kings. We don't think he does. He doesn't have a set of sixes or a set of trays. The only thing we're worried about is king 10, but he wouldn't have checked king 10. He wouldn't have just called 40 with king 10. Yeah. So I think we're winning. We may have gotten lucky here, but I'm definitely going to bet, you know, a third of the pot. So $55, 50, something like that.
Yeah. 50 sounds perfect to me.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe mathematically, but you know, when I'm counting out checks, 50 seems.
Yep. Yeah.
Seems right. Yep. It's a value bet at this point, and a decent size, a smallish size bet there should get a call and should get us some more money here. I'm 80-90% confident we've got the best hand here.
Well, now we're hoping he has ace king and can't put it throw it away.
All right, our hero says with two pair, I decide I can't check, so I go for a value bet of 55. He immediately calls. I show my king 8, and he winces and tosses his cards into the muck. A few hands later, I ask him if he had me until the river. He said he had me dominated, but I'm not sure I believed him. Was I bailed out by the river, or did I have him pegged as a calling station?
Well, here's what I will say. I believe him. I think anybody who raises pre-flop generally doesn't have crap. Also, I mean, earlier we talked about he check called all the way down with ace rag, so you'd have to show your ace rag if you're check calling. So the bettor would have to show a hand first, which means he was happy to show ace rag and lose. So if that's the case, why didn't he show his hand as it being just a calling station hand? I think he had you beat. I think he had king queen or ace king, and you spooked him with your min raise. And so he's like, all right, well, I've got top pair, top kicker. I'm just going to call this guy down now because that's my, you know, my fallback. And nothing really scared him. It went rainbow the whole way. The straights didn't get there unless you had 7-9, which is bizarre. So I think he thought he was safe, but he didn't want to get crazy and lose to a set of sixes or a set of trays. And I think you sucked out on him. I think you had a 3-outer and you got it. And that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, if I'm on the prices right, I'm going all in on king, queen, or king, jack.
Yeah.
Fairly certain that is one of those two hands that, I mean, those are hands that this kind of player would raise with. I mean, most people wouldn't, but it's, calling stations tend to also not raise with the proper hands, right? So, raise with that, hits the king, he keeps it up, we raise, he's a little worried about his kicker, calls, 10 comes, doesn't really help. He checks, you know, we bet again. He calls, and then at this point, he's just he wants to see it, right? Right. I mean, how many times in the program we say, hey, I got to see it, and you throw that money in. Yeah. And anytime you say, I got to see it, you almost never win, but you always see it. And that's why I think he wins, because I think you picked him at the end, right? Because, I mean, how many times has that happened to us? You know, we get into these little passive battles, and that's what this was. This entire thing was passive. There was very little aggression in this hand, even though there were raises, right? And at the end, it just happened that, you know, you hit that eight.
So do you think that it's king, queen, or king, jack? Because if he had ace, king, he would have maybe popped us again when we min-raised the flop?
I don't know. The way you described the wincing and the tossing, I think, to me, I guess I'm just assuming that he thought he was getting away with something here without ace, king, right? He thought he had just a good enough king to win this. And then he sees that eight pipped us. Very well could be ace, king as well, too, I guess. But I think ace, king, he would have, again, it's calling stations. Maybe not. I mean, maybe, you know, once you get raised, you just slow down. But I would think an ace, king would be a little bit more aggressive at some point in this hand.
Me too. I do. I mean, again, we were talking about the min-raise spoofing him, so maybe that's what it was, that he had ace-king and got spoofed. But I feel like you could also min-raise again there, you know, with 15 more dollars or whatever it is, and then, you know, try to get your point across. Yeah, I still feel like I'm strong here. I want to find out if you have a sixes or trays, you know, and he didn't do that. So maybe it is king-queen. You might be right there, but we'll never know.
So maybe if you give me five betting chips, I'm putting two on king, queen, two on king, jack, and one on ace, king.
There you go. Wow, man. You are really like, your DNA is like awesome for betting. I mean, you're just a natural gambler, aren't you? You make all your points with gambling, you know, analogies. It's hilarious. Hey, Todd, thanks for sending the hand and keeping the show going for another week. Right? That's what he said. He didn't want the show to go down without. So we use his hand and we survive another week. We appreciate it.
Get you going.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.